Station number 12246, Lieutenant Colonel W. Waitman, reel 30.
Colonel W. A. Waitman, reel 30. Is it true to say, Colonel, that you prefer the Turkish Cypriot to the Greek?
Not generally, because we made some very good Greek Cypriot friends who, 30 years on, still are very good friends. And the, on balance, I would say that the British servicemen, the 30,000 British servicemen in Cyprus, felt safer in a Turkish village or a Turkish area than in a Greek area. But this didn't lead to any major show of being more amenable and pro-Turkish or anti-Greek. But the Greeks were responsible for the Aeoka uprising and campaign. They made a great song and dance about it. They were more piss and wind, to put it into the vernacular, than guts. Aeoka hardcore was probably only about 115 people at the most, but they had this complete network, which I outlined in an earlier interview. And in addition, they organised disruption in schools and marching through the streets. They made a great show on their own Greek National Oki Day. Whenever they got the opportunity, they would parade and wave flags, and they had their posters up, and Enosis, which meant union with Greece. The Turks countered that with their slogan, Ya Taksim, Ya Ulum, partition or death. And we had to steer a middle course. After the expulsion of all Greek Cypriots from RAF bases and army bases on the island, it certainly hit them hard. And as far as RAF Nicosia concerned, there was no further incident because we'd got them off the place. At Christmas week, the governor of Cyprus, Sir Hugh Foote, later Lord Caradon, who sadly departed this life a couple of months ago, made a very, very noble gesture in going personally to the Nicosia Central Prison and commuting the death sentences onto Aeoka terrorists who were due to be executed the following morning. At that time, we didn't view it from the humanitarian point of view, and were rather anti, but with the advantage of hindsight and retrospection, Sir Hugh made this very humane and brave gesture, and it may well have influenced the atmosphere for negotiations which were going on behind the scenes. The sentences were commuted from death to life imprisonment. In the February of 1959, the Chief of Staff Director of Operations, General Ken Darling, called a conference of 42 intelligence officers, plus the senior intelligence director, Prendergast, and special branch Jack Burge, as directing staff, and we got a good 48-hour ear pounding, and direction for operations in 1959. But the afternoon of the second day when we dispersed, the Zurich Agreement between the foreign ministers of Britain, Turkey and Greece was signed, so virtually things were unwinding down. That was followed by the London Agreement signed between Archbishop Makarios on behalf of the Greek Cypriots, Dr. Kachouk on behalf of the Turks, the Greek and Turkish ministers, and our own foreign minister. And the London Agreement meant the end of the emergency. Within a short time, Archbishop Makarios returned on Olympic Airways Skymaster to Nicosia to a tumultuous welcome. Part of the agreement included the fact that some top AOKA men were excluded from Cyprus for a one-year cooling-off period, and they were to remain in the Greek island of Rhodes. And this included the top AOKA gunman, Nikos Samson, who again had been tried and sentenced to death, but had his sentence commuted to life imprisonment, in fact was in jail with other top AOKA men in the United Kingdom. As the Greek Cypriot AOKA groups came into Nicosia to hand in their weapons to Greek Cypriot police, the setting was completely devoid of any UK police or UK service personnel being on hand, and handled entirely by the Greek Cypriot police. And as they came past the RAF station Nicosia and 113 maintenance unit, there was a great deal of cheering and yelling as they went past, and expletives exchanged between these AOKA chaps on the village buses and our sentries on duty at the maintenance unit gate. The whereabouts of General Grievous and his second-in-command, Antonis Georgiades, had long been believed to be in Limassol, and this was in fact so. And he came up to Nicosia and had a conference of top-ranking AOKA supporters. And moved for at least one of the nights to the northeast of Nicosia to a large village called Kathria. And on the third day, RAF Nicosia was ordered to stand still completely early in the morning of the third day. Even as Wing IO, I was just on the fringe of it. But I saw a Greek Air Force, Royal Hellenic Air Force Dakota, standing on number 27 runway. And it crossed my mind that something was coming up. And sure enough, a black saloon car came with Grievous and Georgiades on board, escorted by Prendergast, the Director of Intelligence, and Jack Burge. And they got on this Dakota and were flown to Athens. Grievous was to return in later years as commander of the Greek Cypriot National Guard. And on my second tour, we saw him on two or three occasions in that capacity. The guards were gradually thinned down with the ending of the emergency and reduced to normal peacetime requirements. And the situation on the island returned to a very stable, peaceful condition. Yet underneath, there was always the latent problem that would surface in later years of Greek and Turk. And not only Greek versus Turk, but Greek versus Greek. Because you've got the AKEL, A-K-E-L, A-K-E-L, Communist Party, and you've got right-wing elements at the other end of the street. So whilst Makarios came in as president, and some of his ministers, including the Minister of the Interior, was an AOKA top man, I referred to earlier, Polycarpus Yorkadjis of Palakori, came as Minister of the Interior. It was undoubtedly there was storms on the horizon or just round the corner, whichever metaphor you like to use. My last duties at RAF Nicosia were to train the non-regiment personnel of the admin wing, the flying wing, ground crews, and the 113 maintenance regiment and the technical wing in riot squad duties, because the army thinned out immediately after the emergency, and a great number of the units, which had totaled 30,000, were returned to Europe and the UK. And because of this latent possibility of trouble and rioting between Greeks and Turks, I had the job of training the Penguins and Shinies, as we called them in the Royal Air Force, in riot squad duties. And I threw myself into that with our usual vigour, and having given them the theoretical side in the Astra Theatre, gave them the practical side of the demonstration of A and B flight number 26 LA squadrons, one as the riot squad and the other as the rioters, and beer cans and whatever were flying around as usual. I left the island on the Empire Fowey on or about the 19th of February 1960, and the Fowey's nickname was the Empire Foulpest. It had been a German Nazi ship as part of the Hitler Strength Through Joy movement, and took groups of Hitler youth out into the Baltic. But my wife, family and I gave a party for our good Greek Cypriot friends as well as our Brit friends, and I was personally very sad to say farewell to some very good Greek families, such as the very wealthy Chapa family of Nicosia and the Scufides family, who had electrical goods from the Acropolis, from whom we rented our last house. And those friendships have stood the test of time over 30 years.
Where did you go to next, Colonel?
Well, on our way down the coast of Cyprus, turning into the Med, Her Majesty the Queen gave birth to her son, Prince Andrew, and the skipper gave a very good cocktail party. After a brief popping into harbour at Malta, we came into Southampton, and I returned to my wife's family home in Cottingham near Hull for some well-earned leave. I then had to go for a medical appointment, as I had an awful lot of throat trouble, and towards the end of my leave, I went for tonsillectomy at the Catrick Military Hospital. I then served at Royal Air Force Station Leeming in the North Riding of Yorkshire for 18 months. At that time, RAF Leeming was number 228 Operational Conversion Unit, where aircrew were trained to fly and navigate the Javelin, Gloucester Javelin all-weather fighter. The pilot did 3 months learning the aircraft on the simulator and actually flying it, and the navigator did 3 months in the back of a Canberra working the air interception radar. Then they teamed up for another 3 months, and at the end of 6 months went as a pair of pilot navigator to the operational squadrons in fighter command, which at that time stretched from Coltishall and Wattisham in Norfolk and Suffolk up to Lucas in Scotland as part of the United Kingdom Air Defence Region. In mid-1961, I was sent up to No. 11 Group headquarters at RAF Euston in Northumberland as Group Intelligence Officer, while the incumbent Squadron Leader Harris was on leave for a month, as his number two had been detached to the Middle East during another flap at Bahrain in the Gulf. And Squadron Leader Harris I'd known in Cyprus, and we always referred to him as Cloak and Dagger, Mr. Cloak. I was then posted to RAF Leckenfield because number 228 Operation Conversion Unit closed, and RAF Leaving became number 3 Flying Training School, and there was no established post for an RAF regiment officer. In addition to station regiment ground defence training duties, I was the station security officer responsible for the half a dozen RAF police at the guardroom and on the station. At Leconfield, I took over the same duties again of station regiment officer and intelligence security officer. While I'd been at Leeming, I did the short security course at 1 week at Air Ministry, or MOD as it was to be called, and a week at the RAF Police Depot, which that time was RAF Debden in Essex. And shortly after my arrival at Leconfield, I was able to do the long intelligence course at MOD Whitehall, which was a great benefit to me. After my 3 years at Leconfield, I had been told, unofficially but in a friendly way, by a squadron leader in the Air Secretary's branch, that as I'd done 3 years at Nicosia, 6 months earlier in Jordan, he'd get me posted to Singapore. However, he must have forgotten this, because in the end of October 1964, I went out unaccompanied to RAF Akrotiri and on detachment again to RAF Nicosia, where I met him in the mess, where I was able to thank him for the posting to Singapore, which didn't come off. Nevertheless, I was able to meet up with my former Greek Cypriot friends, the Chapa family and Skoufidis. Skoufidis, in fact, went to Nicosia, and I thought I'd be landing there, but then was down in Limassol to welcome me on my first night back on the island. Whilst on that tour, which again I got an extension and enjoyed 3.5 years at Akrotiri, my wife joined me just over 4 months later with our three daughters, and we were able to get up during the racing season for race meetings at the Nicosia Race Club. We all joined the Episcopi Saddle Club, where I enjoyed 3 seasons of polo, and in fact was one of the 4 members of the RAF Cyprus polo team, and we were also members of the RAF Akrotiri Saddle Club. So we had quite an equine life for most of our 3 years there. Whilst at the race meetings at Nicosia, I immediately recognised one Nicky Sampson, the top AOKA killer, who was now a prominent newspaper editor with his newspaper Machi, which means battle. And in the course of general race going, was in conversation with him about racing. Two of his best horses he'd named after AOKA units. One was called Locke, which means Locosaurin on Cathodromaeus, a mountain group, roughly translated. And another one, Cathodromaeus, meaning unit or special group. He invited my wife and daughters and myself round to his office, showed us round his newspaper printing works, and asked us 2 or 3 times back for cold drinks. Neither of us referred to the AOKA campaign. He would know that I'd been an IO on our side, and I knew what his dreadful reputation was for bumping our lads off in the back. And he'd also, we're pretty certain, he killed the medical officer of the Blues in November 1956 at Nicosia in his car, shot him dead in his car. He had a photograph of Macarius in his office, and the only political point that he ever made was that he was desperately devoted to Macarius. Now, this was in 1965, coming up into 66 racing season, but it changed dramatically in 74 when he was instrumental in the general's plot organised from Greece against Macarius, and whilst Macarius fled and got asylum in the Episcopi Akrotiri sovereign base area, was helicoptered out. Sampson was installed as puppet president 1974, July, and this led to the Turkish invasion and occupation of Cyprus. So he pushed his luck once again and brought hellfire and retribution on the northern half of the island. And one can only say, one has no sympathy whatsoever for him or the Greeks. He was later sentenced to 20 years imprisonment. He may well be out now, probably in some sanatorium or out on health grounds, but it was self-inflicted and they got all they deserved. In 1965, under Dakotiri, number 27 LA Squadron was detached from Akrotiri to RF Kamakstra in Aden, where they were sorely needed in the close defence of RF Kamakstra. I and Senior Air Craftsman Smith were detailed off to visit all married families and children twice weekly, and this I did for some 3 months. And on one occasion in Ayas Nikolaos, I noticed a Greek Cypriot wrought iron metal cross with the letters AOKA on it attached to a private house in the Ayas Nikolaos area at the east end of Limassol. I made inquiries and found that that was the house where Grievous had sheltered since he was flushed out of the forest by the para in early 1956. He had hid up in Milakuri village near Kiko Monastery, which was curfewed for some 90 days, but never found, and then made his way to Limassol. So I called and paid my respects to the owner, one Mario Christodoulidis, and asked him if I could look at the room where presumably Grievous lived. I had been told when I was an IO that Grievous and his second in command lived in a house with a lady gentleman and their two daughters. And our intelligence buffs knew this from people working for both sides. But of course they moved from place to place in different vehicles, hooded and blindfolded, so they didn't know whether they were on their arse or their elbow. But Mario said certainly. Took me to his kitchen sink, opened the doors where the pots and pans were kept, took a few of them out, lifted a tomato box, garden greenhouse type box, and said, just go in there, down the ladder, and move along, and you'll find yourself in an underground room. And Smith and I did this, and sure enough, there was a panelled room with two British Army officers' cots in, an icon of St. George, a cut-out icon of St. George, and one of St. Anthony. And I became quite friendly with Mario and his wife. And I later asked if my wife and family, daughters, could look round the Grievous room, and this they readily agreed to do so. And we remained friends for the next couple of years. He ran a prosperous jeweller's shop in Nikosol, in Limassol, no doubt from the money that he earned for harbouring Grievous, which would be an astronomic sum. Bioka, who got funds from firms in Cyprus, either genuine donations by pro-AOKA supporters and certainly Macarius supporters, and also by extortion and rackets. And of course, at this time as well, whilst Mario prospered with his well-upmarket Swiss-type jeweller's shop, watches and rings and the like, and his wife, I think her name was Stella, had a good-class shoe shop next door, other ex-AOKA men hadn't the business acumen, and they went on into the protection rackets again and fell foul of the law and were duly clobbered for trying to finger transport companies and other firms and the like. So it was interesting from my point of view to meet the dreaded Nicholas Sampson and enjoy a respected, neutral friendship with the Christodoulidis family. On the 6th of April 1968, my tour of Cyprus was up and we returned by Britannia Transport from Akrotiri to RF Lynham. Fortunately, on our return that evening, we all spoke to my wife's father, who was desperately, gravely ill in the UK. She'd been home twice, once in Christmas 1967 and again in the middle of Christmas 1966 and again during 1967, mid-67, to see him as he was so ill. But he hung on in there very, very bravely, and we were all able to get a word with him on the telephone the night we got back to RF Lynham. And when we were waiting for the transport to take us to Swindon Station the following morning, I got a telephone call to say that my wife's father, Fred Tarrant, had died that morning. I kept that to myself and didn't inform her of this very, very sad loss until we got back to my brother's farm and had supper and went for a quiet walk. My next posting was to RAF Catterick, and we spent a month at my late mother's house and then moved down to RAF Catterick beginning of May 1968, for a two-year tour where I was commanding the training support flight, eventually running the junior officer courses, honorary secretary of the RAF Equitation Association, and led the RAF Catterick Nijmegen March team successfully in 1969.
What brought about the end of your RAF side of your career?
I had decided when I got back in 1968 that promotion prospects were possibly 50-50. I'd served under a Mark I shit of a wing commander for some 2 years at Akrotiri, who didn't like myself or my wife and family because we mixed with all ranks and were accepted and invited by to functions by people from the Commander-in-Chief, Chief Marshal Thomas Pickett, downwards, down to airmen, whilst never losing sight of the fact that we were officers, and my wife was an officer's wife. She, in fact, rang the RAF Akrotiri Wives Club for over a year because they couldn't get a wing commander's wife to do it, because some of them were inverted snobs and thought they were out of the top drawer. And she ran it with tremendous gusto. And I shall always remember the late Virginia North Lewis, the Air Commodore's wife, saying that when she announced that Val would be chairman again for another 6 months, she said, "Bill, the rafters rang." But on assessing my promotion prospects, I decided to tell them to get stuffed, and I'd come out at my optional retirement date. Normally this would have been at the 38 years of age and 16 years service point. In my case, my 2 years as a regular DLI officer counted, and I came out at 44-16. The commandant at the time, Group Captain Donald Pocock, was very keen for me to stay. Both he and earlier chaps like Air Commodore Wootton, Group Captain Barnard, Wing Commander Wilson took over from this Mark I shit and told me that I'm definitely in the line for promotion. But I decided to come out, and I'd hoped to get a job with Bass, and had two successful interviews with the personnel director of Bass. But unfortunately, there were no vacancies in North Bass North at that time, although he put me in personal contact with the late Vernon Parker, who was at that time MD of Bass North, which was then based at York. But I came out, and while still on my resettlement leave, took up the appointment of personnel officer and public relations officer with the Agricultural Cooperative Farmway in Darlington, covering an area from Berwick-on-Tweed down to Driffield in the East Riding of Yorkshire. I think Donald Pocock, well, I know, definitely wanted me to stay. He told me straightforwardly and honoured me with an Air Officer Commander-in-Chief's commendation and the New Year's Honours, 1st of January 1970, for the work I'd done on the training support flight, junior officer courses, the Nijmegen marches and the RAF Equitation Society over the previous 2 years. I forgot to mention that I was awarded a mention in dispatches in Cyprus in the London Gazette of October 1958 for my work in Paphos Forest with A Flight 2 Field Squadron under command of 1st Battalion of the Royal Berkshire Regiment, and my work on the Mason-Dixon line, both of which were seen personally by the Wing Commander Admin of RAF Nicosia at the time, Wing Commander Peter Thompson. I always tell my friends that it was not for anything really out of the ordinary other than drinking Keo and playing cricket. A Squadron, A and B Flight, its deployment in support of 50th Brigade, the Army, between Sunday the 8th of June and Friday the 20th of June was very successful, in which the RAF Regiment distinguished itself on the ground in the old city of Nicosia and the surrounding environs and villages such as Gunyeli and Strovolos. I was very, very proud indeed of my excellent airmen.
And these were basically national servicemen?
In the main, I would say, over 90% national servicemen. Salt of the earth. My NCOs were superb. People like Corporal Walker.
No,